Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I want to especially thank all of you who participated this morning for making us from the United States feel very, very much at home. In our country, as was the case this morning, we often agree to disagree, and that's what I heard taking place this morning, a lot of agreement to disagree. I'm going to just talk for briefly and try to bring to the question of minorities and the Roma issue a business perspective. And I would begin by asking all of you to ask yourselves whether there's really a problem here or not. I'm not sure that I heard a clear consensus that there is a problem. And yet, this is a measurable portion of your population, whether it's 200,000 or 5% or whatever, still is a significant number of people. They're big enough to have an impact and potentially be a burden on your society. They have a substantially lower standard of living. They have a substantially higher unemployment rate. And all of those things would cause most people to say we probably have a problem. On top of that, there are allegations that they have a higher crime level. And by the way, low-income people in all countries of the world typically are more involved in crime than are middle-income people or high-income people, so I'm not surprised to hear that. So I guess the question I first ask you is to decide whether or not it's a problem, because if you're not willing to accept it as an issue, then you're not ready to start dealing with solutions. I would also ask you to take a business perspective, a company perspective, an employer perspective, and view yourself as a manager responsible for all of Czech society, and realize that a substantial portion of your society is not, for whatever reason, currently contributing. And if you were trying to run an economic enterprise, you would clearly have to do something about getting that portion of your society that wasn't contributing back up to where they could contribute. Let me move now to why, from our perspective, a business person's perspective, you'd even be involved in this issue. Most of your businesses are very successful in running their operations. We've come to develop a model which might help you, and it requires that you think of business as having two sides. One side is the hard side, the numbers side, the gross revenue or turnover, the profits, the cash flow, the market share. And businesses, to be successful, have to be good at the numbers side. But successful companies have come to realize that underneath the numbers side, there's also a culture side, a soft side, that is kind of a statement of who the people in that company are. And if you think of the soft side as a three-legged stool, the seat of which becomes the platform, hard side, and the three legs are what make the organization have a solid foundation for growth and a solid foundation to deal with change in an ever-changing world. So one of those legs represents learning. If the organization isn't continually reinventing itself and learning, it will have a weak leg. And another one of those legs is the organization's understanding of the concept of quality. If the organization isn't customer-focused, continuously improving, and totally involving all of its stakeholders, it'll have another weak leg. And the third leg of the stool is a leg that deals with diversity, as we call it in America, and work-life issues. If people aren't comfortable within the work environment with the other people they work with, if they're not comfortable with the way their work life relates to their private life, if they're not excited to come to work in the morning and learn and contribute and be customer focused, then you have another weak leg. And what's important is to recognize that not only do all three of these legs have to exist, but they all have to be strong, and they all have to be the same length. If one of them is shorter than the other, then the foundation of the business tilts. If one of them wobbles, then the whole business wobbles. So business people are typically interested in the agenda of this conference because it represents one of the legs of the stool of the foundation on which they build their businesses. Let me talk secondly about a couple of basic learnings we've had that really aren't related to this issue alone, but are related to business in general. The values and leadership of any business come from the top. So if you're going to address this issue from the employer perspective, it's got to start at the very top of the company. It can't be in the middle. It can't be at the bottom. It's got to start at the top and work its way through the whole organization. It has to, any business issue, has to be one that everyone can identify with, regardless of their function within the business. The people who are involved with marketing have to identify with it. The people who are involved with production, the people who are involved with accounting, the people who are involved in engineering, the people who are involved in human resources, everyone throughout the organization has to identify with the issue. So when we talk about diversity, it's not typically just a human resources issue, but rather it's manifest throughout the organization. A basic business tenet is that there must be accountability. And to support accountability, and this came out this morning real clearly, there must be measurements. What makes business enterprises function as smoothly as they do and as successfully as they do year after year is typically that the management and the employees of the enterprise appreciate how important it is to measure their progress. So I now want to take those four tenets, and I want to suggest to you that there are three stages we've come to learn about this issue of diversity and EEO and affirmative action and all that sort of thing. The first stage, the most basic stage, is one which I will call affirmative action, and that's the stage where the employer enterprise measures where it is, and it ascertains how many minorities do we have working for us, what are the age of our employee population, what's the gender of our employee population, are there religious issues and religious holidays that have an impact on the way we run our business. But it takes a picture. It measures where it is. The second stage that the organization goes through is one usually that starts near the top but always has to involve the top, where there's a basic understanding that we as a group of people who work in this company are going to value diversity. And that's kind of saying, if we're on a journey, here's where we want to go. That's the horizon. So we know where we are because we took a picture and we measured where we are. We now know where we want to go because we've agreed that valuing a mixture of genders and a mixture of ages and a mixture of people is going to be important to us. The third stage is what's called managing diversity, and that is going on the journey from knowing where you are to where you want to be. And it involves continually relooking and taking actions to change it. So with that as a framework, let me share the American experience from an employer's perspective. I think there are four areas where we might be able to share our experience with you. One of them has to do with the use of quotas. What has been the role of quotas from the business perspective? The second one has to do with the role of training. The third one has to do with the role of minority purchasing requirements. And the last one has to do with the role of business and community collaborations. Use of quotas. Guess what? It's very, very controversial. It has been going on in different stages and in different ways now for 25 years. And we still have a great continual debate about whether they're good or they're bad, and do you create a reverse situation by using quotas and measuring. I think there have been a number of studies in our country that have shown that quotas by themselves don't necessarily help. If you look at the number of minorities are employed in the workplace today versus the number who were employed when we first started having quotas, what you'll see is that most minorities are employed now in larger organizations, but that in general there aren't any more minorities employed. That's what the studies show. They also, show that quotas don't hinder. Those people who are afraid that quotas might cause a backlash typically have no basis in studies that we've done in our country. We do know that while quotas forced upon an organization don't necessarily help, that this whole concept of measurement does help. And it's almost a requirement for any progress. As I said earlier, that's the first step. There's also a question, though, about what you measure and making sure that you're asking the right questions. If you talk to any business person, any business enterprise, you'll find that when you have to lose, when you lose an employee and you have to hire and train a new employee, it's expensive. Estimates run from one time the employee's earnings to several times the employee's earnings, depending on how sophisticated and technically capable the employee is. If you want to look at statistics in your company, I would urge you to measure the turnover on a number of ways. What's the turnover by gender in your company? And what's the turnover at different levels of your company? And what's the turnover by ethnic minority in your company? And if you find that certain ethnic minorities have a much higher turnover than others, maybe you should try to find out why. So when we talk about measurements, that's the sort of thing we're talking about, that there's a direct relationship between the business costs and certain things you can measure. The thought here is you want to measure in order to be able to achieve continually improving your performance, getting on your journey toward whatever value you've set. You're not measuring to improve. You're measuring to achieve. Excuse me, other way around. You're measuring to improve, not to achieve. I would also point out that in U.S. companies, even though we don't get nearly the pressure we used to get from the federal government, from my associate down the table, there's increasing pressure within companies. And many large employers and many small employers have started tying managers' pay to managers' ability to have a diverse workforce. And it's a key operational measurement in arriving at executive compensation in a lot of U.S. companies, even though there are no external rules or laws that say you have to do it. It's just the way the company has elected to tie performance to commitment on this particular agenda. So let's move to the role of training. Yes. The answer on training is yes. A very, very critical element. I want you to all close your eyes and think about your grandmother and your grandfather and what their values were about politics or religion or sex or anything controversial, and think about your discussions with your grandparents, and you probably would conclude very quickly that there's no way you were ever going to change your grandparents' basic values. And the same thing is true on this issue within your company. You are not likely to change the values of your employees or your supervisors or your managers that come to work. What you can do is change people's behaviors. So training programs that are targeted at changing values are likely to fail. They've been tried by the best trainers with the most capable techniques and the most elaborate resources, and they've almost always failed. You cannot change people's values. But you can change people's behaviors. So training programs that are targeted at changing behaviors to address this issue are highly likely to make a difference, whereas value training programs aren't. Think for a moment that you're an outsider. I was going to do something with the group. I was going to have all the NGOs sit at one end of the table and all the government ministry people at another section of the table and all the others at another section of the table, and then have one person get up and go sit in the middle of the other group. And then we were going to ask that person how they felt. When you're an outsider, regardless of what kind of an operation it is, it has an impact on the way you work. It has an impact on the way you feel. So part of this agenda from the businessman's perspective is, how do we run our organization so that people don't feel like outsiders? If the blacks in America, in your company, feel like outsiders because they're surrounded by whites, and there's a lot of tension about race, we're not likely to get as much productivity out of either group. So I think when you think about the training program, you're looking to create environments where people don't feel so much like being an outsider. One of the things that's worked very, very well, and it's never been aggressively packaged, has been the informal concept of mentoring, where someone has a buddy or a pal or a supervisor who kind of is guiding them and giving them a place to go and talk about their issues. We have in our country now a major initiative to take people off of welfare. For many years, you've been able to go on welfare and stay on welfare. And we have people who have been on welfare for several generations. Well, the mood in our country has changed, and we've now passed laws that say over the next 5 years, we have to get over 50% of the people off of welfare, and after that, no one can stay on welfare for more than, I think it's 4 years. So, enormous challenge. And one of the things we know already is as we go to take someone on welfare who's been structurally, traditionally on welfare for a long time, even if we have a job, they don't know how to do that job. They don't know how to dress. They don't know what to do with a paycheck at the end of the week. They don't understand about their medical benefits. They don't know how to talk to other employees in the company. So the kinds of programs that are showing up all of a sudden are programs where the welfare-to-work person now gets training in the job, but also training in working skills, what to wear, how to get to work on time, how to set your alarm, all the basics that are going to be necessary. And in the model I'm most familiar with, that same person has a buddy or a mentor who works with them for an entire year, not a full-time job, just a couple hours a week to look after them, to help them have a higher probability of making success. So it takes a special, extraordinary kind of investment to bring people who are completely disassociated with the work world into the work world. I'd also point out that improper training can really backfire. We've had horror story after horror story of the company that did training and created a bigger rift than existed before. because they didn't do it correctly. And it's a whole other subject we could spend the whole day on. But if you're going to do this kind of thing, spend some time to design your programs correctly. So number three, minority purchasing. The government has, in our country, you heard about some of this morning, set-asides where certain kinds of business and certain kinds of products and services are set aside for minority or women-owned businesses. And they have said to many of their larger contractors, we want you to have those kinds of practices as well. And, you know, there are a lot of businessmen who will say, or businesswomen who will say, I lost out on a contract to a minority, and the only difference was that, you know, they were a minority and I wasn't. And quite frankly, I can do a better job and what have you. It's taken us a long time to figure out how to do that well. And I would suggest to you that we still make a lot of mistakes. There are a lot of cases where companies got created improperly with a minority of some kind as the lead, even though it was just on paper. And there's been a lot of scandals. The concept, however, it turns out to be one that a lot of businesses adopt. And most of the large companies in America have indeed certain kinds of preferences. Everything else has to be equal. You still have to have a good product. You still have to have a good service. You still have to have a competitive price. But if everything is equal, the final criteria will be, is the company a minority or business, a minority or woman-owned business? There's some factors for success for those companies. They need to be persistent. They need to have good product knowledge and good service knowledge. And they need to be people-oriented. Those are the success factors. When there's a legitimate minority-owned business that is successful and you study it, you'll inevitably find that it's would be good in spite of itself. It's potentially more attractive to some of its customers because it's minority-owned. And when there's failure, and I'm sure there are many cases in this country where a minority enterprise failed as well and didn't get anywhere by being a minority enterprise, it's because they overpromise. They think they have an edge just because they're minority instead of because they do good business. Or they don't have the value-added product or service that the customer's trying to buy. So the government minority preferences can also contribute to business failure by causing people who don't have good business skills to try to go into business. And there's a high turnover among minority businesses, even with the preference. So it's something that this is an area that I think needs to be examined very, very carefully in how you do it and if you do it at all. Finally, I want to talk for a moment about business and community collaborations. Again, like training, the answer is yes. But it's a very special a set of rules that makes it work. If the community is demanding of the business, or if the business is demanding of the community, it won't work. This really needs to be a collaboration, a partnership. There need to be common, mutually respected goals. And I'll give you some examples of where it's worked. In Chicago, one of our biggest cities, it became real clear that the trade unions doing construction work were discriminating. They had very, very few minorities. And the trade unions were approached by the minority communities who also went in concert to some of the larger people with construction projects. And they basically cut a deal that said the union could go on site if they would drive up the minority participation and start to do training programs and apprentice programs for minority carpenters and minority plumbers and steam fitters, etc. And it was very successful. There have been a number of cases where universities, those of you who are from universities, have collaborated with local businesses to create training programs targeted at specific minority populations in an attempt to break the minority spiral. So I think I'd be happy to be a resource with specifics in the question and answer session or tomorrow, but there's lots of experiences we've had that might be useful in your case. In summary, I would observe that for those of you who wonder whether you have a problem or not, you might want to think of it more as an opportunity instead of a problem. I want to suggest that it does make good business sense for employers to get involved in this issue. There's lots of precedent to point out that these kinds of initiatives and this interest, and I think most importantly, this set of values can be beneficial to the business. Whatever approach you take needs to follow basic business principles. You can't deviate from what makes good business. And you need to spend some time, this is both business and the community, thinking about quotas and thinking about the right role for training and the right kind of training and the level of minority outreach and the level of collaboration. The Czech business community and the Czech community as a whole, to my experiences, and I've been here before, has a wonderful value of entrepreneurship. It exists throughout the country and it's obvious in many of your industries. I would urge you to take that spirit and apply it to this agenda. Tom Peters many years ago wrote a book and he said the companies that are successful, the enterprises that are successful, are the ones that have a motto, do it, fix it, or do it, try it, fix it. And I would urge you to take that approach to this problem. Thank you.